on the record.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to restate my motion. Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman, I would like to rescind the previous vote that this conference committee made.
Thank you. Is there any objection? Seeing none, we will rescind the last action.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to restate the motion before the conference committee. Mr. Chairman, I move the conference committee adopt the Senate version of the bill.
Okay, thank you. The motion before the committee is the adoption of the Senate version of House Bill 247, which is 29-GH2609/AA.A. Would the secretary call the roll?
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Tarr?
No.
Chair Tallarico?
No.
Senator Coghill?
Yes.
Senator Machicki?
Yes.
Chair Giesel?
Yes.
For the House, 0 yay, 3 nay. For the Senate, 3 yay, 0 nay.
Thank you. So by a vote of 3-3, the conference committee has failed to adopt the Senate version. So with that, I'd like to give a brief explanation of where I believe we are. And a comparison document was distributed showing the differences in the bills that passed the House and the Senate. And I would like to use the Senate version as our working document. We have four Ledge Legal amendments that we'll receive from Ledge Legal. We have some conceptual amendments as well that I believe that Rep. Tarr has distributed for us. I know that the four that we have that are being drafted up deal with refinery tax credits, local hire, confidentiality of tax credit purchases, and a six-month extension of the Frontier Basin expiration credit. And we will, as we bring these amendments up, we will discuss them and take action on them. I want to remind everyone that we do not have limited powers as this conference committee or free conference committee powers. So everything that we would act on today has to be mirrored language in either bill. It has to absolutely be the mirrored language from one bill to the other bill. We don't have limited powers available to us or free conference powers. Are there any questions or any discussion on that particular? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just want to make sure that I will be able to offer those conceptual amendments because the timing was such between yesterday afternoon and this morning and talking with you, Ledge Legal was not able to prepare them.
Yeah, we will get to those. And I do appreciate you having those available for us. Right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So at this time, I don't believe we have amendment number one. Is that correct?
No, we didn't.
Okay. Okay. All right. So anyway, to move along, we do need a working draft, and I would entertain a motion to adopt the Senate version of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the conference committee adopt the Senate version of the bill as our working document.
Thank you. A motion has been made to adopt the Senate version of the bill as a working document. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chairman, I do. I object to using that. I think the House version gets us closer to the compromise that we're going to need for a bill to pass. But we'll have the opportunity to offer amendments, so I want to just state that objection and just hopeful that this important piece of legislation can get enough votes to get through the session. And I'm concerned that we won't get there with the Senate version, but I will offer amendments on some of those points this morning.
Okay, so you're maintaining an objection to?
I'll remove my objection with those comments. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Is there any other objection? Okay, thank you. We have adopted the Senate version as the working document for the bill. So we do have in front of us, and I believe everyone has a copy of amendment number one. Representative Olson, would you like to offer amendment number one?
I move amendment number one.
Thank you. I object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Amendment number one adopts the House confidentiality language regarding
credits. The House bill required revenue to make the names of the companies that sold the credits to the state public, and the amount of the credits purchased in the previous calendar year. The Senate only required that an aggregate amount of all credits purchased in the previous calendar year without breaking it down by company.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion on amendment number one? Representative Carr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate this amendment coming forward. This is, for many people, a pretty important provision in terms of transparency and feeling like the Alaska public needs and is rightfully interested in finding out where our limited state dollars are going, and to the extent that that information can be made public without violating any confidentiality provisions for tax purposes, I think we should take every opportunity to do so. So I'm supportive of strengthening this language.
Any further discussion on amendment number one? Is the objection maintained?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Could we have a roll call vote, please, on amendment number one?
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Representative Tarr.
Yes.
Chair Tallarico.
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
Yes.
Senator Machicki.
Yes.
Chair Giesel.
Yes.
House 3-0 nay, for the Senate 3-0 nay.
Thank you. Amendment number one has passed. We'll go to amendment number two. Senator Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number two, which is AA.A7.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. Senator Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, in the Senate bill, we added some language kind of stepping down the refinery credits. So this would remove that language from the Senate version. This amendment will actually go back to the status quo is what we have. So Alaska businesses, especially up in my neck of the woods, rely on these tax credits. We're entertaining having the F-35s up there, and there's some refinery work that's being done as we speak in anticipation of these Air Force jets being up there. So I think it's not a good timing for us to do these. They do follow the step down. I think they're 2022, I think they followed down. So anyway, this just removes the language that was added in the into the Senate version, just removes it.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Is there any further discussion on amendment number two? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm also going to speak in support of this this amendment. This was a provision not in the House bill. Another reason why I would have preferred adopting the House version to be our working draft. And I think, you know, caused some problems. One of the reasons I think it's appropriate to support this amendment today is that these provisions were never discussed in any House committees. So I don't think any House members have a full understanding of the impact of the provision, so I support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Any further discussion? Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, as the Senate considered this tax credit reform bill, many members of the Senate, particularly the Finance Committee, took a broader view looking at all the tax credits, of which there are a very large number. The refinery credits being one, we have commercial fishing credits, education credits, a large number. Consequently, the refinery credits, of course, fall into the subject matter of this bill, oil and gas. But one of the things we became aware of is that some of our refineries, we have three, are reconfiguring to process and produce asphalt. This is a key commodity for this state for road construction. And so I am happy to support this amendment, which would return the refinery credits to the status quo that they have been, allowing our refineries to reconfigure and become even more productive for the benefit of Alaska citizens. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Any other discussion on amendment number two? Seeing none, is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there any further objection to amendment number two? Seeing none, amendment number 2 is adopted. Thank you. We will move to amendment number 3, Representative Olson.
I move amendment number 3.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Amendment number 3 adopts the House version of local hire language, which required the Department of Revenue to grant preference between two applicants to the applicant with a higher percentage of resident worker workforce, including workers employed by the applicant's direct contractors in the state in the previous calendar year.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Is there any further discussion on amendment number 3? Senator Michicki.
Mr. Chairman, we in Senate Finance, what we tried to do is we evaluated the cash outlays by the state. So we tried to incentivize sort of waiting to collect your credits. And what we did is the first $35 million is at full value, same $70 million limit that the House had, except the first $35 million is at full value, and the second $35 million, if you want to get paid for those credits in the same year, is only at 75%. So with combining these two in this amendment, the cash outlay for the state is only $61 million. So it's a savings of $9 million per company for the repurchase caps and the credit as well.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. Any further discussion? Seeing none, is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Is there any further objection to amendment number 3? Seeing none, amendment number 3 is adopted. And I will move amendment number 4.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. Amendment number 4 adopts the House date on the Frontier Basin Exploration Credits, which will change that date from January the 1st, 2017 to July the 1st, 2017. And that will that's an extension of 6 months for the Frontier Basin, or what many people refer to as Middle Earth tax credits. Any discussion on amendment number 4? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe the recognition by the House and the version that we had before us, which this reflects, is that there were some opportunities there that were ongoing and didn't want to do something that was disruptive while those are being pursued. So I support this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Any other discussion? Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also am in support of this amendment. The Frontier Basin, while likely will not be a massive resource discovery, nevertheless can provide energy to the local areas, and that's significant to those areas. Cost of energy, we know in rural Alaska, is extremely high. One of the pieces that the Senate was aware of is that we have an interior energy plan going forward, and so certainly the work that's being done around Nenana, should that be a substantial gas discovery, could readily support Fairbanks in terms of gas supply. So some of the communication that we've had with the governor's office about the interior energy plan is that idea of making sure that we are accessing the least expensive energy, and so making sure that the timing works well. So I do support adding this making this amendment and really supporting the Middle Earth, specifically Native corporations, which are exploring around Nenana and also in eastern Alaska. So I support this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Is there any further discussion on amendment number 4? Seeing none, is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection.
Thank you. Is there any further objection on amendment number 4? Seeing no further objection on amendment number 4, amendment number 4 is adopted. And we'll, Representative Tarr, I believe you have brought us some amendments, some conceptual amendments, and if you don't mind, we will continue write down our numbering system as you move those.
Perfect.
Okay. Do we need a brief at ease for distribution?
Yeah. We have.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just for context, thank you again, Mr. Chairman, for getting in touch. Yesterday afternoon, you and I spoke about 3:30, and I had some indication of the amendments that were going to come before us that we've just previously adopted. But in my review after that, these were items that I thought were important to bring up between the two versions as we consider them today. And I appreciate the consideration of the conceptual amendments, and I'll do my best to describe them so everyone's on the same page. So I move amendment number 5.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to remind everyone, the current system for Cook Inlet for oil and gas tax is that there's a cap. That is set to sunset in 2022. What we did in the House version was we pulled that back to 2019, and we additionally created a Cook Inlet working group, the members of which would work throughout the interim, and they would come back next year with a proposal that would get full consideration, go through both bodies. I imagine if it's anything like the bills I've worked on over the last 4 years, at least the resources and the finance committees would both consider the product put forward by that working group, and we'd really be able to spend some time on thinking about what the right oil and gas tax system for Cook Inlet is. In the Senate version of the bill, instead what was done, and what is troubling for me, is that this was a provision that we didn't spend any time talking about in the House, so I don't feel like I've had a good opportunity, and I know among conversations with some of my colleagues, they're feeling the same. What the Senate version does in Section 15, it removes the 2022 tax cap and provides that the tax may not exceed $1 per barrel. That is discussed in the fiscal notes. There's a small bump in revenue demonstrated by that. That came very late in the process. That was not a provision in the bill through most of its path through the legislature this session. Came in, at the 11th hour in the Senate Finance Committee. I don't think we've had a full opportunity. That's going to be a really important change going forward to make sure we can have stability for our South Central gas supply. We're lucky that we know we have about a 10-year supply with the contracts that are in place right now, but I certainly don't feel completely out of the woods for my constituents, and I know others around the table might feel the same. So I want to make sure that we do a good job, that we have something that can have some durability to it. And this bill was really about just looking at credits. And, what we really focused on were the credits in the Cook Inlet, the Middle Earth credits, the North Slope credits. We didn't really, and it was my understanding that the administration really didn't want this to be about tax policy, but really this year was about looking at the credits. And I thought the potential for the Cook Inlet Working Group to do some good work and really evaluate the system would be beneficial. So this amendment basically prefers the two sections of the House bill. The one that pulls that back to 2019, I think that's kind of a compromise between the House and the Senate so that we know we would be getting some revenue closer in the near term, because I think theirs is effective 2017, and then also puts that working group back in so that we can spend the time over the interim with all of the talent of the people. I'm sure people are at this table, as well as other resources and finance members, would like to be a part of that discussion, and we could really hear from the stakeholders and make sure we come up with a good oil and gas tax system for Cook Inlet.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Any further discussion? Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The small bump in the oil, which has not been taxed in quite some time, is about $5 million a year in Cook Inlet right now. It kind of opens the door for that discussion. We've just removed several hundred million dollars a year of credits out of Cook Inlet. Pretty big hit to the industry. Pretty big hit to my district, Representative's district. Do I think that the taxes are going to be 17.5 cents per am post 2022 or $1 a barrel for oil? Probably not. Legislature has the right to pull together a working group anytime they want to work on this. And if you think about what created those credits, House Bill 280, that was bipartisan support, bipartisan creation, didn't require a working group to put that together. So. I don't think it needs to be codified. I'm not going to support the amendment, but I have no doubt that work is going to be done before 22 on what Cook Inlet should look like.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Any further discussion? Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also oppose this amendment. In the Senate version, we recognize that in the past few years, 50% or more of the tax credits have been going to Cook Inlet. This has been a huge monetary outlay, but certainly Cook Inlet is a basin that provides energy security for more than 50% of the state's population. It's also a very constrained market, but in the next 18 months, which is the provision in the Senate version for ramping down the credits, that basin has the potential to become unconstrained. That is to say, more buyers available in the market for that gas. As you know, the balance is between supply and demand. So it is our hope that demand will go up in Cook Inlet in the market. We have Donlin Mine, which will have its EIS completed in the next 18 months. We'll know whether that's going forward. They will have a demand for natural gas. Agrium will either be going forward with a renovation and restart or not. They will have a huge demand for gas. We'll know whether AKLNG is going forward. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, there is a Regulatory Commission of Alaska consent agreement in place right now in Cook Inlet, which does constrain the cost of gas, the price of gas. All of that will be gone in the next 18 months, allowing that market to become unconstrained. We talk about stability, and putting in place a working group communicates instability. It communicates yet more deliberation on the tax taking by government. And so as the Senate considered this, understanding that there's been no tax on oil in Cook Inlet for at least a decade, but there's been a very small tax on gas, we felt it appropriate to make that tax, put a tax in place on oil, so that the state can begin to regain some revenue from all of the tax credits we've placed in Cook Inlet, and make it comparable to the 17.5 cents per MCF that has been on gas. So that was the rationale that was gone through, providing stability, providing some revenue return to the state for the significant credits that have been given in Cook Inlet, which right now has produced gas and has longer-term contracts provided for more than 50% of the state's population. So thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Giese.
Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on amendment number 5? Seeing none, you want to do a brief wrap-up, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to remind folks, if we look at the timeline, the way the Senate version is, it has it effective starting January 1, 2017. What the House version anticipated was a working group through the interim for adopting an oil and gas system in the next legislative session, so say between January and March, April of 2017. So the benefit of adopting this amendment is the House members won't be asked to vote on something that they've actually never seen before, which I think could be problematic for many because there'll be a lot of questions about the implications of these provisions, because as we studied it, we were going to actually put some additional effort into that because we didn't really spend a lot of time on that. So What we would be doing here is we'd be saying, okay, instead of January 1, 2017 making this change, maybe a couple of months later, after having some really vigorous review by many different members and including significant input from the stakeholders, be able to come up with something that would be a good workable oil and gas system. My goal would be that we could find something that could work for 10 years without changes. The industry rightly criticizes us for making changes all the time. And this is setting us up for having to make more near-term changes. Alternatively, we could adopt this working group. We could spend the interim with, you know, the energy that people can put into it. I know there's a lot of interest in it, particularly for South Central legislators. And then come back next January, work on the recommendations, and hopefully within a couple of months of that, we would adopt, you know, new provisions that would be for an oil and gas tax system. That to me seems like the preferable route to make sure the right people are at the table to have the conversation, to do something thoughtfully, and again, in the hopes that this legislation can pass during this special session, because It's really difficult to vote on something when you just have not had any time or any presentations about what the impacts are going to be. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is the objection maintained?
I maintain my objection.
Thank you. Would the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Tarr?
Yes.
Chair Tallarico?
No.
Senator Coghill?
No.
Senator Machicki?
No.
Chair Giesel?
No.
For the House, 1 yay, 2 nay. For the Senate, 0 yay, 3 nay.
Okay. Thank you. The amendment number 5 has failed to pass. Go to Amendment Number 6. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment Number 6.
Object.
Thank you. There's been an objection. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the significant deficiencies from many people's perspective of the Senate bill is the lack of changes to the North Slope net operating loss credit situation, and have a couple of amendments about this particular item. What we know, and just for any folks watching or listening, is right now what we didn't anticipate when we crafted Senate Bill 21 was that some of our big companies, the three majors on the North Slope, would have not net operating losses. Of course, they're the over 50,000 barrel folks, so we are losing that as a against their tax liability. The under 50,000 are the people we're paying cash payments to the tune of $700 million or $1,000 per every Alaska man, woman, and child. So one of the things that the House version did to try and tighten down on this was limit who would qualify for those net operating losses from those only producing 15,000 barrels and below. So it would go from a 50,000 to a 15,000 barrel threshold. That in itself constrains and protects the state, even if we were to be in a period of low prices, as people are suggesting might happen for the near term. So this is just one of those provisions that we should look at as a way to limit the state's liability going forward. And what this does is says that only those companies producing $15,000 or 15,000 barrels or less actually qualify for the net operating losses. The ones over that do not qualify.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Any further discussion on Amendment Number 6? Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, I oppose this amendment. Mr. Chairman, multiple consultants, as well as our own Department of Revenue, have pointed out that we have a net tax system. And the net operating losses are a key element in that net system. This amendment, Mr. Chairman, is a progressive step away from a net system, which would allow companies, just as we do on our income taxes, if we itemize, to deduct our losses. So that's a fundamental element, Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman. Sorry. Another key consideration here is that the price of oil today is around $49 a barrel. It's changed significantly over the time that we have been in session since January. And again, the Department of Revenue has opined to us that above $45 a barrel, approximately $45 to $46 a barrel, there is no net operating losses being accrued by the companies on the North Slope. So that begs the question, why would we now want to begin modifying a net operating or a net tax system into a gross system when in fact the problem is going away over time? So, Mr. President, I do oppose this amendment. I also, just for fact check, the credits that are being considered for the next fiscal year is $500 million. The additional $200 million is the $200 million that was vetoed by the governor for this fiscal year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Any further discussion on amendment number six? Seeing none, Rep. Tarr, brief wrap-up.
Sure. Well, I think Senator Giesel just respectfully disagree, but I feel like you made the point exactly. If this is not a big deal, why wouldn't we deal with it now? We have the opportunity to deal with it now, and in my opinion, it's irresponsible to leave it going unchanged. We know, and this is just cannot be disputed by the legislative record, when we debated Senate Bill 21, we did not model under $60 a barrel. We did not discuss what happens at under $60 a barrel, and we did not anticipate the problems we're finding today. That was editorialized recently in the Alaska Journal of Commerce, who said, you know, this whole conversation is happening because we didn't model under $60 a barrel. So now we've learned that at these low prices, this is a system that does not work and means significant liability to the state. And just where the $700 million comes from, if you're including the almost $300 million that we'll lose for the net operating losses against tax liability, then you get well over $700 million. When you add last year's, we get closer to $1 billion. So it's significant. It's hundreds of millions of dollars to the state. They're not necessary. These are the wealthiest corporations in the world. These folks, they made record profits in Alaska. I believe they have the talent that sat around the table when they were making record profits and said, we better plan for a rainy day because we know these record prices won't last forever. And we also know that we don't do a good job at predicting what the price of oil will be. We passed a budget that needed to be at about $105 per barrel, and then we saw it drop all the way below $30. And at that, you're losing millions of dollars a day in those prices. We're thankful today that we're close to $49, and it may be true that we're a little bit out of that window at this one period of time. But we have no way of guaranteeing next week we won't be back to $30 and we would find ourselves in the same position having had this lengthy debate and choosing not to address it. That is fiscally irresponsible, in my opinion. We know what the problem is. We can prevent it from happening again today. We know how costly it is. And just for folks to remember, because these net operating losses can be carried forward, this means that we will be losing money for fiscal year 2018, fiscal year 2019, fiscal year 2020, and going forward, it will be hundreds of millions of dollars. And we really now, what we should be looking at in these credits is what happens under $60. We should be completing the work that we didn't do before, and this is one of those provisions. It's been clearly demonstrated that left unchecked at those prices, this is a system that can bankrupt us. And right now, after we've spent months studying it, and the public is very tuned into the problem, it does not make sense to me. It does not seem fiscally responsible to not address the problem today. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Is the objection maintained on amendment number six?
It is maintained.
Thank you. Would the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Tarr.
Yes.
Chair Calarico.
No.
Senator Coghill.
No.
Senator McChickie.
No.
Chair Giesel.
No.
For the House, 1 yay, 2 nay. For the Senate, 0 yay, 3 nay.
Thank you. Amendment number six failed to be adopted. Go to amendment number seven. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number seven.
Object.
There is an objection. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This also deals with net operating losses, and the previous one we were limiting who could qualify. One of the things that we did in the House version was also step down. And the Senate and House versions are a little bit different in this, in sort of the timeline. In some cases, the Senate version was more aggressive. But given the other provisions of the House version, feel like this one is a more appropriate step down and doesn't have the potential to cause as great a disruption.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Further discussion on amendment number seven? Seeing none, Representative Tarr, do you have a brief wrap-up?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Is the objection maintained?
It is.
Okay, thank you. Would the Secretary call the roll?
Yes.
Rep. Chair Tallarico.
No.
Senator Coghill.
No.
Senator Machicki.
No.
Chair Kiesel.
No.
For the House, 1 yea, 2 nay. For the Senate, 0 yea, 3 nay.
Thank you. Amendment number 7 has failed to be adopted, so we will move to amendment number 8. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move an amendment number 8.
Object.
There is an objection. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is one of the most important provisions that took a lot of work and compromise from the House version. This would limit the ability of the companies to carry forward the net operating losses. And just as a reminder, we were given some fiscal analysis by the department, and looking forward, what would happen because of the House provisions is by fiscal year 2021, we would eliminate net operating losses from our budget. But the Senate version, going out all the way to fiscal year 2023, there's still hundreds of millions of dollars in net operating loss. And at a time where essential state services are being cut, it's irresponsible, in my opinion, to be giving the wealthiest corporations in the world hundreds of millions of dollars of Alaskan dollars when they're not necessary. And in reference to a net profit system, what folks should also remember is, you know, you take the price, you deduct the transportation costs, you also deduct capital expenditures, you also deduct operating expenditures, all before you even get to taxing the company at all. So it's a very generous tax system built in with a lot of deductions and additional credits, and carry forward of net operating losses is not necessary. And again, it's one of the provisions that we did not fully address when we drafted Senate Bill 21. We didn't look below $60, what happens, here's what happens, and we have an opportunity now to make limitations to these net operating losses so that these hundreds of millions of dollars are not carried forward and when they're not necessary.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Any further discussion on amendment number 8? Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, I've spoken to this subject moments ago. This would be a significant rewrite of our state tax policy. This bill and the subject being addressed this session is reform of the tax credits, not a complete rewrite of our tax system. I also draw folks' attention to a document that was submitted by the Department of Revenue Tax Division when these bills, the Senate and House versions, were originally introduced in this legislative session. The document is dated January 20, 2016, and it lists 6 major bill goals for this legislation. This comes from the governor, Mr. Chairman, the governor, the administration. And the major goal number 2 says protect net operating loss credits as essential playing field leveler between incumbent producers and newcomers. I think that really summarizes the fact that the net operating loss was not the subject of this legislation, was not intended to be the subject of this legislation, and would significantly change our tax policy and likely companies that are here working and the jobs, thousands of Alaskan jobs that would be lost, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, from the change from the previous tax policy to this one of the things that we were working to correct was the 20% CapEx credit. I mean, think about 2013, according to Journal of Commerce, we paid out $918 million in credits in 2013. Tried to correct that 20% CapEx credit, but still stay with an expense-type scenario, just like anyone opening a deli with, you get to write off your expenses. We have a net tax, profit tax system, and your expenses are part of what you're able to write off. And, you know, in the future, we may talk about a depreciation schedule. I've talked to another member about that. But, again, we keep talking about these hundreds of millions in net operating losses because the evaluations we've seen were on the spring forecast at, I think, $38 a barrel. We've been told by the administration we don't believe we're in a net operating loss scenario. So the hundreds of millions that they're talking about going in the out years is not an expected burden on the state. I have to admit that if that were the case and prices were to dip back down for years on end, I certainly would be interested in evaluating a better way. But at the moment, that's the system we have. Senator Giesel talked about the governor's letter. I think the governor made a wise choice there in understanding why that switch was made from the CapEx credit to the net operating loss system that we have today. I won't be supporting the amendment, but I do want folks to remember that our heaviest credit years were in the past, under a different scenario, a different prior to the passage of this tax policy, and certainly hope that we stay in the 45 plus range and much higher, so hopefully in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Any further discussion on amendment number 8? Brief wrap-up, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in response to a couple of the comments about whether this would be a significant rewrite of tax policy, I think that was violated by putting in a tax policy for Cook Inlet, and that came in the Senate version, so certainly haven't been consistent with that point. And looking at what might happen at these prices, again, if we have learned anything, it should be that we are not good at predicting the price of oil. We passed a budget last year that required $105 barrel oil to pass that budget. And then we saw prices dip well below what anyone anticipated. And if something like that happens in the next couple of months while the legislature's not in session, then we will have to come back next year and have this fight all over again. And in my opinion, that is fiscally irresponsible. And we know we can fix these problems today. And if they don't matter, they're just it's hard for me to understand why that's a problem then. I mean, you're saying this is something that won't impact you today, but it protects the state going forward. And I think my role as a legislator for my constituents is to protect the state from these huge losses. And what people need to understand why this will impact us for the next several fiscal years is because they will earn the losses in 1 year, their taxes won't be due until the next year, and then by the time that is applied against their liability, it will be in the following fiscal year. So whatever we do now, we will even have the next couple of fiscal years, we won't be able to change what's happened. Those are the things that have already been accrued. What we can change is maybe a few fiscal years out so we can protect ourselves from that. And I think it's the responsible thing to do today, and I'd ask for consideration of this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Is the objection maintained on amendment number 8?
It is maintained.
Thank you. Would the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Tarr?
Yes.
Chair Tallarico?
No.
Senator Coghill?
No.
Senator Machicki?
No.
Chair Giesel?
No.
For the House, 1 yay, 2 nay. For the Senate, 0 yay, 3 nay.
Thank you. Amendment number 8 has failed to be adopted. We have amendment number 9. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 9.
Object.
There is an objection to amendment number 9. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things we learned that was a problem in Senate Bill 21, again, not anticipated because didn't fully anticipate the net operating loss problem, was the way the minimum tax could be pierced. And so even though we thought we had a 4% minimum tax, it turned out we really didn't have a 4% minimum tax. The working group chaired by Senator Giesel recommended hardening the floor, a real hard floor. That provision was in some ways adopted by not allowing the GVR to interact with the net operating loss. The per barrel credit originally was made so that couldn't be done. But we really didn't fully address the hardening of the floor. And in the governor's original bill, there was a 5% minimum tax increase at all prices. What we did as a compromise in the House version was really tried to be more price sensitive and really look in the range where we can safely say that companies are profitable. And so we had a compromise of a 5% minimum tax starting at $70 per barrel. And so, again, the original version, this was an item addressed by the governor's original bill for a 5% tax at all prices. We compromised to make that at $70 a barrel, recognizing that's when all companies are comfortably in the profitable range.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Any further discussion on amendment number 9? Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is a significant tax increase. It is not merely 1%, as some have opined. This is a significant increase in taxes on these companies. It is our job, it is true, to protect Alaskans. And that is what the Senate version does by maintaining the 4% minimum tax as it exists now in law. We are protecting Alaskans' opportunities for jobs, good-paying jobs. And it's not just jobs in the oil industry, Mr. Chairman. We know that each job in the oil industry ripples out into our economy to approximately 20 jobs, either directly related or as a result of a robust economy. Mr. President, government is a powerful, powerful player in our economy. Government takes by force through taxation. So we hold some very powerful tools in our hands to affect this economy and affect our Alaskan families, our neighbors, our families, our friends. Mr. President, raising the tax to this degree without thoroughly vetting this, Mr. President, is simply not advisable. And certainly, we can have a discussion about tax policy sometime in the future. This year, we're focused on tax credit reform. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Any further discussion on amendment number 9? Seeing none, Representative Tarr, a brief wrap-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a reminder that this was in the original version, and I think, as I understand it, it was in part because the working group recommended hardening the floor. And so, I guess it's just surprising that when the work that included the stakeholders looked at this, it was one of the provisions that was discussed and actually recommended that now we're moving away from that recommendation. And again, remembering that we have a net profits tax system, a $70 barrel per oil, with all expenses paid, they'll get to deduct their transportation costs, their CapEx costs, their operating expenses. They take about $50 of the value before we ever tax any of it. So they're well within the profit range at $70 per barrel. There are some that suggested that a minimum tax should be much higher, and in many other jurisdictions, the minimum tax is much higher. So 4% puts us at the bottom of the barrel. 55% at $70, again, is a reasonable consideration because we know that the companies are making significant profits at those prices.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Is the objection maintained on amendment number 9?
It is, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Would the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Tarr.
Yes.
Chair Tallarico.
No.
Senator Coghill.
No.
Senator Machicki.
No.
Chair Giesel.
No.
For the House, 1 yea, 2 nay. For the Senate, 0 yea, 3 nay.
Thank you. Amendment number 9 has failed to be adopted. We have best of my knowledge, we have no further amendments before the committee, so I will open the floor for a discussion on the bill as amended.
Mr. Chairman, I am happy to make a motion.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I have comments.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that you got in touch with me yesterday. I was disappointed that here we are on day 14, this is the first meeting of this conference committee. I think it's been made aware of everyone what an important piece of legislation this is for many of us. that this is the first step in any fiscal plan moving forward. I noticed the other five members around the table here all have the same script highlighted for different things. So clearly there was some coordination and discussion that I was never privy to. Perhaps that's the process as everyone understands it. That's certainly a disappointment to me. I don't feel like there was much conferring going here in this conference committee, and was happy to support the amendments from the House version today that I think strengthened the bill. But on the most important provisions of the bill that were the most contentious and likely would be the reason someone would support or not support the bill, I feel we did not have sufficient discussion and really sufficient effort to resolve those matters. I think the public will view it as a failure of this legislature if this legislation passes. And I couldn't say what will happen today if a bill comes out of here, but I think it's, you know, there's just as great a likelihood that it will not pass as there is a likelihood that it will pass. And even if it does pass, it'll be by the slimmest of margins and potentially set in motion a process that will not allow a fiscal plan to come out of this legislature. I think we can do better work than that. My first understanding that there was any compromise was when I heard it on a public radio story. I responded to that and copied everyone on the committee on that. Not my particular style, but I think there was a real lack of communication. And again, maybe it's my perceived understanding of how this would have worked, and I think we could have done a better job. And I'm dissatisfied with the work product today.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Any further discussion? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the people of Alaska had the opportunity 2 years ago to weigh in on this, and they did. And basically, they supported the direction that the committee has gone in, I believe. I don't think anybody would like to argue that. I'd sure like to hear it. But I don't think it's proper to change it less than 2 years. My humble opinion.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Any further discussion? Senator Coghlan.
Tough as it is, the oil companies, the gas companies, the people that produce the economy in Alaska and actually help us have a budget are under stress. It's an international downturn in the market. They have had to change their behavior. They've laid off people. They've quit drilling and things like that. But it's important that we as a state respond as well. There are some things that we've incentivized, mostly in the Cook Inlet, and they have worked well. They have secured a very good gas supply for the Cook Inlet area, for the better part of the population of Alaska. They also have changed their behavior, and this credit issue, though successful, cannot be maintained. It's just not sustainable. And so what we're doing is we're changing the way we're incentivizing. It's our investment in the state, basically, and that's true on the North Slope and on the Kenai Field. So this is tough all the way around, because no matter which way you look at it, a downturn in the value and the price of oil has changed the whole world, and we just happen to be the tail end of it. It's been very difficult because we have had to talk about the whole tax and credit system, unfortunately. With regard to the communication, I think so many committee meetings on the House side and on the Senate side, I think all of us have been reading, studying, and looking at both versions. So I think to say that there wasn't any communication, I think, is not exactly accurate. It is true, though, that we in this building stay busy, and in the conference, I don't think the representative had come and talked to me, and I haven't gone to talk to her. I've been studying. So this is tough. It's tough business. It's going to affect Alaskans. And I think the people of Alaska need to know that if any compromise, everybody's going to walk away unhappy. support going forward with this, as unhappy as I am.
Thank you, Senator Cogno. Any further discussion? Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just a few things on the conspiracy theory. I can tell you right now that I received the documents about 30 minutes before, which is common in a conference committee. Just went through the operating budget conference committee where significant costs were added back in, worked over by very few people. It's sort of how the conference committee works. We added back in significantly, which the minority supported, resulted in a three-quarter vote. Not everyone, unfortunately, gets to be a part of that. That's how conference committees work. But I can tell you right now that I learned a lot when you did. And but a couple of other things that I think are important. One of the things when we evaluated the floor hardening, we talked about it in the Senate thing, what we realized is it kicks the can down the road for when prices improve sometime in the future. We're concerned about that. We hope to see an improvement, certainly in the price, and we hope to improve revenue in the future. We know the net operating losses are likely to not be an issue. But when you, and this is specifically for Representative Tarr, on our side, I was probably willing to go a little bit further, but you have to think about losing votes on our side. There were many people unwilling to talk about any of these issues. Just went through a ballot initiative. They were unwilling to talk about any of them. And we dragged them partially toward the middle, right? We changed the GVR. We did some other work that was Senate Bill 21 related. We removed hundreds of millions of dollars worth of credits from Cook Inlet. My district was the highest support for Senate Bill 21 in the state. And I have to answer for that when I get home. But we've dragged people over. If we were to fully adopt the House version, it couldn't pass the Senate. We're trying to compromise in the middle. We've adopted a lot of the boxes of the House version. It may not go as far as some of you wanted it to go, but it goes further than some of the folks in the Senate wanted to go. We're still trying to maintain a bill that can pass both bodies. I'm hopeful it does. It's been significant compromise on both sides, and I hope we can get it across the finish line at the end.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. Any further discussion? Senator Giesen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I want to thank the House for the work that was done on this piece of legislation. I think between the House and Senate, there have probably been more than 70 committee meetings, huge amount of public testimony. Lots of modeling. Certainly the administration has been to my office to discuss the fiscal matters related to this countless times. It's been alluded to that compromise means that it may not be perfect in everyone's view. We all give something. From my perspective, this is not a perfect bill, but it's very good. It's very good. And I agree that it is potentially possible that this will pass by a very slim margin, and I think that demonstrates the difficulty of the bill, the difficult decisions that have to be made. You know, a lot of people send me emails and they say, well, this is simple, just do this, just do that. This is not simple because it does affect our economy. And all of us want the very best. Our heart is for the best for Alaska, not just today, but for the future. And Mr. President, I believe this bill protects our future. It protects our today as well in terms of reducing the tax credit outlay, but also keeping in place a stable tax structure which will do what we can to ensure a major gas project in the future, that companies that are capable of assisting us and bringing forward a major gas project are here, they remain as our partners, and the infrastructure on the North Slope that supports that gas project remains in place as well. So while we agree it's not perfect, it's a very good bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Giesen.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wouldn't ask to speak twice, except the Senator made some comments directed towards me that I would appreciate an opportunity to respond to.
Briefly, please.
Thank you. I think, Senator Michicki, the comments you made were the very comments that I would have liked to have heard at a meeting, say the second day of a special session, to get a better understanding of where members of the Senate are and where our opportunities for compromise would come from. And my disappointment here on day 14 is hearing that for the first time. And my understanding is there's a planned break because of celebration that will further limit our time to address this should a proposal not gain enough votes to pass. So we have limited time going forward, and had we, you know, I think approached this a little bit earlier, we might be able to have more of an opportunity to resolve some of those differences. People need to, you know, understand where different people are coming from and why those particular positions are the positions that they have. I think after today's meeting, that will be more clear to people. But I don't, we could say that this is going to provide stability, because we have not dealt with a couple of the problem areas that if the prices dip low again, we'll have to come back and address. And then I think a couple of people here today said that they didn't anticipate that what we put in for cook inlet oil tax would be something that would last very long either. So we've come so far, and I guess, you know, with a little more work, we could probably get there and actually have something that would provide some stability. But that won't be the outcome today. And I just appreciate you letting me have that second opportunity to talk about that. And just because it's come up a couple times about the referendum, it was just about 4,000 votes. It was just a couple of percentage points. So it wasn't a landslide there. And I would say that remains pretty contentious issue in the state.
Thank you. I just want to say that I appreciate committee members' attendance this morning. I also appreciate your demeanor and your courtesy towards each other. That doesn't always happen when an issue is as contentious as this, something that's been discussed as much as this. So each and every one of the committee members, I thank you so much for that, and I appreciate the amendments that came forward. Since we've had our discussion, I would entertain a motion to report the conference committee bill from committee.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Conference Committee for the House Bill 247 recommend that the House and Senate adopt the Conference Committee substitute version 2.9 Gulf Hilo 2609 /alpha.alpha as amended with the Senate fiscal notes.
And I'll object.
Thank you. The motion before the committee is to send a report to our respective bodies recommending the approval of the conference CS committee substitute, is there any discussion? Seeing none, would the secretary please call the roll?
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Representative Tarr.
No.
Chair Tallarico.
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
Yes.
Senator Michicki.
Yes.
Chair Giesel.
Yes.
For the House, 2 yea, 1 nay. For the Senate, 3 yea, 0 nay.
Thank you very much. Motion to move the conference committee substitute has passed, and I would please ask the members to stay behind to sign the report. We will adjourn at 9:21. We're adjourned.
This is microphone two. There it is. Okay. Okay, the Polycom sounds good. Just a second. To my right. Hello. We're testing the mics. Okay.
I call the Conference Committee on House Bill 247 to order at 2:04 p.m.
On June the 6th, 2016, we're in room 230 of the Bill Ray Center. Would the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Olson?
Present.
Representative Tarr?
Present.
Chair Tallarico?
Here.
Senator Coghill?
Here.
Senator Machicki?
Here.
Chair Giesel?
Here.
Thank you. Now, for the record, a conference committee is exempt from committee meeting notice requirements as specified in Rule 23G. When we last met, the conference committee approved four amendments. Amendment number three, which related to local hire, also removed language related to repurchase restrictions on companies from the oil and gas tax credit fund, which was not the intent of the committee. In order to adopt the amendment as presented, the committee will need to rescind our action adopting the conference committee report, request limited powers of free conference, and report out a new committee substitute. Senator Giesel, can I have a motion to rescind our action?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the conference committee for the House Bill 247 rescind our action recommending that the conference committee substitute be adopted.
Thank you. Any objections? Seeing no objection, the motion passes. Can I have a motion to ask for limited powers of free conference on the section regarding local hire and repurchase restrictions?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we request limited powers of free conference for House Bill 247 on the specific points mentioned in the letter, House Section 35 and Senate Section 25.
Thank you. Any objection? Discussion?
I'm just going to
Representative Tarr.
For one moment, and Mr. Chairman, not on this provision, but after the meeting this morning, what I learned was a different provision from the Senate version related to delinquent taxes and the interest rates could be problematic, according to the Department of Revenue. I want to just bring that up because we may have the opportunity to reconsider that provision as well. And I don't know if there'd be interest from the committee members. And I was not able to hear those conversations when they took place in the Senate to fully understand why they were saying there were some challenges there. So I just, like I said, that was brought to my attention after the committee, and I don't know if they're unable to address that provision as it is written, how that will be resolved. And so I just want to make that known that that was brought to my attention.
Okay. Technically, I think what our limited powers are just related to this one particular subject matter that we're dealing with here. So I think we'll have to move forward with this as we are for that one subject.
Can we take a brief at ease, Mr. Chairman?
Brief at ease. Okay, we are back on the record. We had an objection for discussion on the motion. Is your objection maintained?
I'll remove my objection, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Representative Tarr. So the motion passes. There are two copies of a memorandum that we both need that both need to be signed before we move on. We'll take a brief at ease so that the members may sign the memos. We're at ease. Okay, we are back on the record. My office has prepared a conference committee substitute that includes all of the amendments that passed this morning, except for amendment number three. Instead, it adopts the House local hire provisions on page 22, lines 11 through 16, while leaving the Senate repurchase restrictions intact on page 22, lines 11. Oh, I'm sorry, numbers are wrong.
Just the second line.
Oh, brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record. I'll restate that. My office has prepared a conference committee substitute that includes all of the amendments that passed this morning, except for amendment number three. Instead, it adopts the House local hire provisions on page 22, lines 11 through 16, while leaving the Senate repurchase restrictions intact on page 22, lines 17 through 23. Can I have a motion to report the new conference committee substitute from committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move that pursuant to receiving limited powers, that the Conference Committee for House Bill 247 recommend that the House and Senate adopt the Conference Committee substitute, version 29, Gulf Hilo 2609, Echo Echo.
Thank you, Senator Giesel.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to just object for discussion because I think, as Senator Coghill indicated, maybe my comments, my earlier comments would be more appropriate. And so I just wanted to get on the record that, and this would be section number 8 in both the House and Senate version, and I was just trying to review this comparison that the Department of Revenue has said that the Senate language could be problematic in figuring out the interest rate on delinquent oil and gas taxes. And my apologies for not having any more information to go with that, but because we have the opportunity today, if depending on how things move forward, this may be a provision to revisit and just make sure that we've ironed out any of the problems that they are indicating they might have. So that's Section 8 from both the House and Senate version that perhaps is something that needs further consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Is the motion before the committee is to send a report to our respective bodies recommending the approval of the new conference committee substitute, version EE. Is your objection still maintained?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. Would the secretary please call the roll?
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Tarr?
No.
Chair Tallarico?
Yes.
Senator Coghill?
Yes.
Senator Machicki?
Yes.
Chair Giesel?
Yes.
For the House, 2 yay, 1 nay. For the Senate, 3 yay, 0 nay.
Thank you. The motion passes. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, I'd like the members to please stay behind to sign the report, and the meeting is adjourned at 2:13. We're adjourned.